Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny audio number 466. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Oh, not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How are things with you?
It is still interesting being in the old residence to record yet another podcast. I did think that this one would be occurring in the new one, but, you know, things happen. And we move along, and we will be doing that in, 2 weeks, actually.
Oh, nice.
So, outside of that, I can't really argue it is not the worst thing that has ever happened in my life. And it is not the best thing that's happened in my life. I would have to say, though, one of the better things to happen in my life was the announcement of all women's pay-per-view for the WWE.
Well, you're hitting that hyperbole like WWE has the last 2 days, then. It's a big deal. It's definitely. I don't want to say long overdue because I don't think it reaches to that level, but it's a good thing, and I'm glad it's happening.
Well, I feel like definitely Jeremy in the past has talked about the all women's promotions quite often, and always tried to find that work. It was definitely something that that was missing in the WWE, at least from a you know, small doses, and it certainly has kind of evolved as they are throwing down our throats over the last, what would it be now, 20 years or so, it's really kind of started to gain some steam with obviously some fits and starts because, what, the Attitude Era was 96 to 99?
98 to 97, 98 to, you know, yeah, I mean, that original incarnate, so, able to carry around, that was definitely not a serious attempt at a women's division.
Well, yeah, but it did end with Trish Stratus and Lita and Beth Phoenix. So, I mean, they were at the tail end of the Attitude Era. And, you know, not that things didn't kind of drop off a little bit after those ladies kind of exited. But for the most part, they've gone definitely more towards the athlete type. I would say the women that can work a little bit better since that time. And it's really been a slow build. And like you said, I'm not sure that this was long overdue because I'm not sure that they had the woman power to do something like this until recently.
Right, no. This is the time. You got the talent. You've got maybe more than anything else that, you know, which would, the thing that probably made Vince McMahon sign off on this is you got the mainstream star to build around. Obviously, Ronda Rousey's going to be in the damn main event. That's not even a question. And she's going to be front and center on all the advertising.
Yeah, I mean, the little bit of advertising I have seen right off the bat, I believe, was Ronda Rousey in the front, Charlotte on one side, Alexa Bliss on the other, and the look of shock and surprise on my face was non-existent, that those three might be the first three faces that I'd see on such a program.
They are the three faces of the division, without a doubt. It's definitely the time to go with it. I think this has been, you know what, maybe not, I know that maybe you could argue that 2 years ago, Charlotte, Sasha, and Becky were having better matches against each other than what we see on a regular basis on WWE TV this year, But I think from a character and writing and just your star power standpoint, I think the women have really come into their own this year. I think the women's storylines have been, have held arguably the most interest. I mean, yeah, it's not just Rousey on the SmackDown side of things. As much as some people want to complain about Carmella, she has heat. She's a heel. People want to see her lose. They've done a great job building Becky back up after being on the back burner for well over a year here. Once again, Alexa Bliss is in the same vein as Carmella, but probably a little more poised on the microphone, a little more development character wise over time. She's a heat seeker on the Raw women's side, and from the announcement of the Women's Royal Rumble on, we've definitely had some really strong stuff with women this year, and I think this is definitely the time. You've got the three championship matches, possibly four, if the new UK division is able to sprout up and have a championship to be represented as well. Finals of the Mae Young Classic. When they say 50 women, that's a huge number. So I imagine there'll be something like a Battle Royal on the show. And that's maybe where they'll get more of the legends and some of the other NXT ladies on the show.
And that was one of the one of my favorite things, and I can't believe that I didn't get around to talking to Jeremy about it today. But the fact that Nikki Cross, I saw her before they even made the women step forward, I was like, oh, Jeremy is going to be so happy right now. And the fact that she kind of looked like that clapping psychopath like she normally does anyway made it even better.
Yeah. She looked like she snuck into the building.
Oh, well, and, hey, if you can get yourself up front and close with that one, I don't blame you
for doing so. She's been doing SmackDown house shows recently. I mean, her story on NXT is pretty much done. Doesn't look like they're ever going to give her the title. There's nothing left for her to do. So, I guess the question is, when she comes up, are they going to put her back with Sanity, or, well, no. That would be very, very, very bad. Things aren't going well for Sanity. not to get off that too much of a side track here.
Well, I'm fine with getting at least on a little bit of a sidetrack, just because it doesn't really need a whole lot. But I did laugh when our other good friend Shahid told me not to be that guy when I was talking about about Sanity being Ascension 2.0. And it's one of those things where they haven't gone there yet, but they still need to win some here in the near future to recover from what's happened in their early stint.
Right. Now, I don't think there's any recovery as a group. I mean, especially after tonight. I mean, the game is just going to be getting Killian Dane away from it and pushing him. And Eric Young is older. Yeah, he's definitely older. He, he's got a lot of mileage on him. They didn't want him 10 years ago. So it's like, and then I see nothing in Wolf. I mean, he's just a weird looking guy.
he really does not bring a whole lot to the table. They try to play him as unpredictable, but he does not even do unpredictable as well as Dean Ambrose, so that is a little bit of a problem.
No, he absolutely does not. So, I mean, the game with Sanity is definitely to, get Killian Dane away from Sanity.
Oh.
And do a singles push probably sooner than later. But there would be no upside in putting Nikki Cross with them. So she should definitely be her own thing on, you know, in the women's division going forward.
Put her on Raw just to keep her away from Sanity.
You could definitely do that.
And I guess to kind of go back to the ladies, and you were talking about interesting storylines. As annoyed as I have been at times with the Sasha and Bayley story, I guess I'm kind of interested in where they might be going this time around.
They've got me. They got me with this. It's like, you know, they got me in the palm of their hands. Every second they're on screen together, I am just waiting for the other shoe to drop, for someone to turn on the other one. And however long they can drag it out for, especially since they've got, you know, they've got this pay-per-view that they can, you know, build to. They've got Evolution, which they can build the crescendo with. You know, I think it. No, I think it's finally turned a corner here.
Because it is definitely. I feel like in the past they didn't really add any layers to the story that they were telling and about them bickering. Like, it was always the same fight. And they've kind of repeated that same fight, you know, Sasha's selfish, Bayley's too nice, you know, and it just kind of got recycled, and that was one of the things that was hurting it. Having Sasha tell her that she loved her, and either intentionally or unintentionally making it feel possibly a little bit like a love story,
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to walk the line there. I don't know if they'll go all the way with anything, but it definitely comes up. You know, Sasha told her she loved her. Bayley never said I love you too. She just said, "Oh, you know, I feel the same way."
Right.
Anyone who's ever been in a relationship knows that that's not the same as saying I love you too.
Yes, that is 100% correct. And I really do. I'm actually intrigued this time. That statement really has just changed a lot about what they're doing together. And it's certainly, like you said, like, you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. And my other thing, honestly, that I tweeted out on the Stunt Granny account, if they are seriously thinking about a women's tag division, I honestly, like, if you have, they have plenty of women for the main event for the singles area.
You're right.
You know, like, those two are just sitting there like, well, we've got nothing to do. Now, do they really have enough women to do that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll have to bring up, you know, a number of women from NXT who may or may not be all that ready to both brands to make that work, unless they make for some reason they would make the women's tag team division, you know, a cross branded thing.
Oh.
And
right.
If you do that, you might as well make the women's. Unite the women's singles titles, which you could use. You know what? Maybe that's it's a possibility. I mean, you got. I'm trying to think. Just completely spin off the women onto another show. Yeah, it's just hard going forward because you're going to have. Starting, you know, next year, you're going to have two different television partners to try and keep happy. I was wondering, you could even try to, you know, separate the women from Raw and SmackDown completely and have their own show, but then, you know, either USA or Fox is unhappy with that. But one thing you could do is start to, and you might even be able to do this with some of the men's titles, is, you know, start to pare the titles down and have one traveling champion. So that helps, but. You know, just to, I don't know if you want to, once again, I don't know if you want to do that to look, just to accommodate a women's tag team division. You know,
right.
Some people on the internet said that say that that's what they want.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I, and to go back to the angle that this kind of originated about, like, I don't know what I want out of this angle, but with Bayley and Sasha, but it certainly has me hooked again. I'm glad after, like, 2+ months of them kind of, to me, cyclical fighting to at least get out of that rut. And well, like you said, the women developing characters a lot more recently. And I really just think that neither of them have been explained that well on WWE TV. Like, they both got their video packages early on about who they were in NXT, but they haven't really been able to demonstrate that over that time. And this is giving them, you know, that character that they need moving forward. Whether, you know, they turn heel or they don't. You know, I think that just kind of having this kind of interaction is going to help them, period, end of sentence.
No, I agree. Once again, I'm very interested in seeing where this is going. You know, they got me hooked, and I'm, you know, waiting with bated breath to see how this all goes. I know in a recent, getting back to the Women's Tag Team Championship discussion, I know, I think Stephanie did an interview, maybe with either ESPN or Sports Illustrated, saying that they don't feel that they'll be ready for a Women's Tag Team division by the time Evolution gets here.
Oh.
So it looks like they might not go in that direction. But of course, you know, so yeah, the show does need tag team matches to fill out the card and to break up the monotony of, you know, a bunch of singles matches just in general.
Right.
So, you know, granted they still have 3 pay-per-views left before we even get there. So once again, there's a lot of twists and turns in the story that can take place. I don't know if they can go 3 months without doing the big turn, or 2 months,
right?
Especially since, as a team, women in WWE, once again, we have this whole roundabout thing. There's no, there's nothing for women for teams of women to fight for in WWE either.
Oh yeah, and it kind of, I guess it was kind of interesting that they brought in a couple of local wrestlers, I would assume, for Sasha and Bayley to fight this week. You certainly see that from time to time with the men. James Ellsworth was originally one of these people who has somehow managed to continue to find himself back on TV. But, you know, they do it with the men quite frequently. And I guess they did it with Nia Jax when she first came in. But it was, I guess to me, it was a little striking that they did it for a women's tag team match.
Yeah, it's interesting that they just decided to, you know, feed Sasha and Bayley these nobodies and not anyone on the main roster, or not the Riot Squad, not the makeshift team that they did last week with Alicia Fox and Dana Brooke.
Oh, yeah, no, right.
It was a little weird, but no. I mean, it worked. Once again, we can keep building this up for a number of weeks here. Don't know exactly what this means for SummerSlam, because SummerSlam card is already filling up, and, you know, to put, you know, a women's tag match with, you know, Sasha and Bayley, say, against the Riot Squad, I don't feel like that's something that makes the main card.
Yeah, that would be a tough sell, I would think, even for what is assuredly going to be a 12-hour pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, does once again, and as I was saying, you know, whenever Sasha and Bayley are on screen together, I'm waiting for the turn. So, you know, you pull the trigger at some point in the next 3 episodes of Raw to get them into a match at SummerSlam.
Oh,
now that is worthy of a main show slot. Especially after all this TV time devoted to this story.
Yeah, I guess that's why it's interesting. Is there anything else? Because I guess I can think of... there's another woman that stood out to me this week. But she doesn't really have her own angle. And that would be... Zelina Vega. I completely just... Her name dropped out of my mind. Just because I'm interested in the fact... Is it just me, or are they trying to make him a baby face by doing the whole Tranquilo pose?
That's an interesting question. I mean, their act, with the exception of that, screams heel. But it's something that I don't know how much... it's mostly her thing on Instagram, it feels like.
Right. It's cool if it's just an Instagram thing. It really doesn't need to be brought to the ring. Like, to me, it just makes him kind of look, I mean, I love Almas, and they've definitely, to me, Sanity and their losing streak. I did think coming into the match with Almas and Rusev there, because I guess you have some kind of woman action in there, obviously, at the end of it. But Almas is still kind of coming off like a cocky heel kind of persona. But I guess I just think that a gimmick like that always... kind of gets people on your side.
The making is of a babyface actor there. The Tranquilo pose, once again, that's something that could get usually over. most babyfaces though don't have a manager or whatever the heck their business manager or whatever the heck their relationship is supposed to be.
Right.
In NXT, she would routinely interfere in his matches, and they made that definitely a focal point of, his NXT title reign, particularly in the Johnny Gargano matches, just to set up the Candice LeRae spot.
Oh, right.
Which is, I guess, kind of interesting tonight for me, because it's just like, God, do you know how many months and months and months it took before someone finally... got a hold of her and how she was allowed to be touched, and then in a throwaway match in the beginning of SmackDown, she's being assaulted by Lana. It's like, you had something here, but or you could have had something there, but no. I mean, it's fine. Not some giant waste of money there, but it was just an interesting thought to me. The Almas Vega act has always been really good. Has always been excellent. I guess it has babyface potential, but I feel like they're still set up to be heels.
Yeah, and I guess that was the other thing. I mentioned Sanity there. Oh, I felt like Almas needed a win. He definitely got it. It certainly came at the expense of, both Lana and Aiden English. And I guess it's another woman-involved storyline that is kind of interesting to me. I guess I always kind of liked the combo of Lana and Rusev. And I know that Aiden English brought a lot to the act, but... I would also be completely fine if he moved along.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that it's getting long in the tooth. But, man, without Rusev, he is going to go down. It's just not going to be the same. He's going to be in a rough place. Because I don't believe they see much in him. as a solo act, for sure. Rusev, him, you know, him browbeating both Aiden English and Lana was interesting. Saying that, you know, that you know, he's better off without either of them. That, you know, I guess, you know, once again, I mean, he had his title shot and he lost. Then he lost again tonight. I mean, I don't know exactly where you go with Rusev.
Yeah, he's back in an odd spot. Like, you can definitely play off this loss for obvious reasons. But, yeah, that interaction made me think that they're gonna make him just singles alone, because, you know, there are just some very unique situations, like the Zelina Vega Almas pairing. Like, I guess I'd still be a little surprised if they broke that up, but honestly, on the main roster, they really still have a problem with having, like you said, like, whether it's called a business manager, an advocate, you know, they really don't seem to like the word manager for reasons that are still, you know, right, not completely clear to me.
Right. No, I mean, but far as almost, that's an act that arguably should never be split off. I mean, I think that, I mean, he was on a track of possibly being let go from NXT with, you know, his initial, you know, babyface run was going so bad, until they did the heel turn and brought her on. You know, she saved his career. I strongly make that argument. I mean, he's talented. He finally, you know, figured out how to, you know, translate, you know, his lucha style to the WWE style. So he succeeded too. But I think she added so much to his act. And Lana has been, you know, Rusev has always been better with Lana. But if they're finally ready to turn it, to pull the trigger on a Rusev babyface turn, then he could probably do it without her, which might be the only thing left for Rusev.
Yeah, I mean, he's really kind of covered a lot of territory in his somewhat short career on the main roster.
Yeah, he absolutely has. You know, they probably, not probably. They definitely missed the peak of the whole of the Rusev Day phenomenon to turn him babyface and have a major baby star on their hands. But still, I think he's got enough charisma. You see him follow him on social media. He's got an incredible sense of humor. I think that he could absolutely translate as a top still.
Yeah, so I guess it'll be kind of interesting to see where they go with him. I guess I'm not as, well, how do I want to work? Well, it's just going to be a poor transition now. But I guess I was going to move, since we're kind of on the SmackDown side of things, to the main event angle. With the Miz and Maryse, and little—I don't know what their baby's name is.
Oh, come on,
Jade Monroe.
Monroe Sky. Come on, pay attention. Come on, it's...
Yeah, I probably should have known better because he said it a million times, but it was. Just that is not really on the top of things that I need to remember either. You know, I guess I'm good with this. I liked both, honestly, both Raw and SmackDown did a good job of advertising their thing that isn't on their main show. Because Raw had Elias on pretty much after every commercial break. And it worked, too, because I remember they started the show with him. They're like, oh, his thing is number 15 on the Billboard charts. And then, like, they come back to him a couple of segments later, and they're like, oh, it's number 13 now. And I'm just like, these guys are just selling right now. Like, people are watching the show, and they're like, oh, shit, that's out? I need to buy that. I'm like, that's brilliant.
That was really well done. I bought my copy early on Blink. It's only $2.99 for first song, but I don't know if I'll ever really listen to it beyond that.
I was too cheap even to shuck out the $3. But I thought that it was somewhat brilliant advertising. They did a good job with The Miz, honestly, and hyping The Miz and Mrs. We are recording as it airs, so neither of us is watching it. I did not tape it because
I feel like it. I had it on in the background for a little bit while I was preparing for the show on mute. It looks really, really bad and contrived, even by reality show standards. I love Miz and Maurice, but yeah, this isn't the vehicle for them.
Yeah, I am just not a reality TV show fan for the most part. I know that I've watched a few over the years, and heck, even tried out for Survivor for season 2. Oh. I still have the tape somewhere around here of my audition tape for Australia. Oh,
when we start the Stunt Granny YouTube page, I know what's going up first.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And I do a terrible Australian accent. There was nothing on the commercials that made me want to watch it. And honestly, when they did that video package before Daniel Bryan came out, I figured that was the hype package for the show. And that they'd kind of like be unpackaging The Miz. Like, maybe an idiot moment on my end. But that's okay. Because it was one of those things I'm like, oh, is he going to kind of tell his whole story on this show? Because that would have been far more interesting than them doing a bunch of dumb skits for the TV audience that everyone thinks is going to be fun and moving just for poops and giggles, evidently. There isn't, it would be really hard to convince me to watch. Although it was kind of funny that over the weekend the wife started watching a marathon of the Bellas. Like, she does not normally watch that, and I still haven't convinced her to do a column about it. I keep on trying, but it keeps on failing.
Hey, the season finale is this Sunday. The big breakup.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get a special solo podcast on that one from the wife. I guess it'd be hard for me to get talked into their show itself, good, bad, or indifferent. And it was really bad. I'm trying to think, hasn't someone else done... Oh, did Matt Hardy do the fake baby with Jeff?
I think they met... Yes, they did do it. Yes, they did do a fake... No, that's right. It was...
Yep.
It was Rebby threw the fake baby at Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, because I'm sitting there, I'm like, this gimmick just got done. That and the fact that you could not see legs coming out of the bottom of the baby Bjorn was just a real sure sign that it was not a real human baby in there.
Yeah, it was one of those moments that unfortunately makes the baby face look kind of stupid, but wrestling history is filled with those moments. I don't think anyone was convinced of that there was really a baby in the carry gate pout. What did you call it?
Oh, Baby Bjorn?
A Baby Bjorn?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that, but okay. I'll take your word for it.
Bjorn. Yep.
Look this up.
So, yeah, like you said, it makes Daniel Bryan look dumb for a moment. I don't think it's that big of a deal one way or the other, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, the important part is as we head into SummerSlam, Bryan shouldn't touch this. We waited 2 years. We can wait 3 more weeks. Because it's going on 2 years since the original conversation I thought smack. It's just, this great storyline has fell into their laps. Or they stumbled into an ass backwards. This was never supposed to happen like this, but they got a match with 2 years of build. So, I mean, it'd be foolish for Bryan to, get his hands on the Miz before SummerSlam.
Yeah, they do need to keep them apart. I'm all for, and the WWE actually has done a fairly good job with pull-apart brawls in the recent past. I know they've still had a couple of stinkers here and there, but overall, I've enjoyed them recently. So I'm trying to think of that. I feel like it goes back to that one, was it Undertaker? Brock Lesnar that had a completely awesome brawl that kind of started
the beginning of their love for these brawl scenarios that they repeated it often, but no, they've never quite captured the magic of it, although they've done some things. So yeah, there's plenty of things you can do to keep Bryan away from the Miz. Bryan has to not touch the Miz. The Miz can still attack Daniel Bryan. You still gotta pour more gasoline on that fire. But I don't know. I mean, they've done a great job, and it's definitely going to be a hotly anticipated match at SummerSlam. I can definitely say it seems like the SmackDown side is looking a little stronger than the Raw side right now, because the Raw side is going to be a number of retreads, including two that just happened last week at Extreme Rules.
Hold on. Which ones are those?
Rollins and Ziggler again.
Oh, yeah.
And Strowman and Owens again.
Oh.
Although Strowman and Owens at least has the interest of the Money in the Bank briefcase being on the line, and Strowman apparently can lose it because it's not an official championship. Strowman can lose it, by disqualification and count out as well. So, that puts some intrigue to that. I'm not against that as much as I'm against another Rollins Ziggler match, singles match. when you have them go 30 minutes on top of their other meetings, it's like you can at least do something different with this. A multiple person match of some sort with inserting some other people, but. Looks like, WWE's at least been doing a better job lately of not having as many multiple-person matches per show, and I'm fairly certain the United States Championship situation on SmackDown is heading towards a triple threat with Nakamura, Hardy, and Randy Orton. So, it's best to not have too many of those types of matches on the show, so I guess it's fine.
Yeah, I do... I do like Samoa Joe being in the title picture.
That was so well done. I really enjoyed. I enjoyed all of every bit of that with the Ellsworth interruption and him getting himself fired for being disrespectful to Paige, and she finally just had enough and fired him. Although that does beg the question, who hired him back in the first place?
Well, and it was kind of funny. I do believe they had mentioned that at least at the beginning of the angle that he hadn't been rehired. But I'm not sure if they ever mentioned that he was officially rehired at any juncture either.
I can accept that. It's fine. It led to a funny moment. I'm sure he'll be back.
Yeah.
When he was keeping his all of his independent dates, including his appearance at StarCast over All-In Weekend in Chicago, it was pretty obvious to me that he wasn't sticking around. He wasn't meant to be sticking around long.
Yeah, and it makes sense for him not to stick around for a long time, honestly. He is definitely good in small doses. You know, he's just like any other, in some weird ways, like Brock Lesnar, where you don't really need him all the time.
Yeah.
You know, bring him in doses, and I'm sure that you don't have to pay him like Brock Lesnar either, which is why he, you know, summarily gets fired or let go or whatever you want to call it exactly. But yeah, it did make for a funny moment. It's kind of weird with Samoa Joe. Like every time he pops up, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, they have Samoa Joe, because he is another guy that they haven't really. He doesn't get featured a lot unless he's in a big angle. You know, they don't really have him. And I know it's a tag team, but they don't have, like, the AOP facing Titus Worldwide, you know? Like, they don't have Joe just mowing over competition just to have him mow over competition. Like, he just seems to pop up every now and again, and I'm always kind of, like I said, like, it's always one of those things I'm like, oh, shit, that's right, he's on the roster. That's awesome. And I enjoy it when he's on camera, but he does seem to. I know he's had a couple of injuries recently, but even before that, I felt like there were times where it's just like, yeah, we can't really have you be a badass all the time, so we're just going to take you off TV for like a month or two and then bring you back when we want you to rough someone up.
Right. Yeah, no. It's the whole thing was really well done with the attack and the chokeout and then him signing the contract. It was good that they had a thing with him and Paige backstage, where they made it clear that Joe was Paige's pick to face Styles anyway. That he didn't just blindly sign a piece of paper. Oh, yeah. You know, this is legal now.
Yeah, I mean, well, at least for that temporary time, it's a nice cliffhanger that they had going into the commercial, but I agree with you too, in that it was better to resolve that situation in a somewhat tidy and quick manner.
Yeah, it was a well done thing. Obviously Styles and Joe have a long history with each other. That, you know, we know the TNA stuff, but. Yeah, it goes back to the early days of Ring of Honor, other independents.
Yeah.
Then, you know, this is essentially, you know, them, I guess you don't say, all grown up, you know, wrestling each other in the, I don't know if I want to call it the semi-main event, a SummerSlam, I don't know exactly if you, the SmackDown main event, the SmackDown title match at SummerSlam, you know. And, you know, both of them are still, you know, close, you know, they're still at the top of their game. I expect big things from this one. I think that they'll do really well.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's why it was easy for you to say that the SmackDown side of the SummerSlam card is looking a lot stronger. It'll be interesting to see what Joe and Styles come up with. After, you know, I would imagine that I would be shocked when the last time they feuded was. It's probably longer ago than I think.
What, the last time they faced each other?
Right.
You know what? It was probably 5 or 6 years. I know they would face each other later in their teen. You know, they face each other, you know, repeatedly, you know, throughout their teenage runs. But yeah, no, it would just, well, what, Styles, I think, left TNA at the end of 2013, if I'm not mistaken. Joe may have stayed a year later than that. Yeah, something like that. So, maybe, I know that when they were doing that Bound for Glory series stuff, when they were trying to make a round robin tournament similar to the G1 tournament in Japan work, but they just didn't have the organizational skills to do, you know, math.
Oh, yeah.
To keep up with math. I know that there were matches between, at least one or two matches in this decade between Joe and Styles on Impact. Maybe another pay-per-view match, but I don't know for sure.
Oh, okay. Well, they were in, thanks to cagematch.net, which was the first answer that came up here. Oh my God, so many different multiple man matches. The last time they wrestled a singles match, the 20th of June, 2013.
Oh, okay.
Time limit draw in the Bound for Glory series.
I don't remember them still doing Bound for Glory series in 2013. Damn.
So, I guess that actually seems pretty reasonable. 5 years. Because Styles spent a year plus in Japan. Oh, and he didn't go straight to Japan either.
It was pretty quick. I mean, I think probably the first thing he would have done was Ring of Honor and a number of other indies. Then, I think, let's say New Japan was probably, what, spring 2014? Something like that, I think. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm looking it up myself. Yeah, because Final Storylines 2013, Return to Ring of Honor 2014, 2016. Oh, well, and it says New Japan 2014, 2016. So, yeah, it was a pretty quick turnaround. I felt like he was in Ring of Honor for, I guess he did go back to Ring of Honor, but Ring of Honor really, even at that time, had a working relationship with New Japan.
Right.
So I guess I shouldn't be too surprised that he could jump to New Japan quite quickly at that juncture. And I guess that's maybe more what I'm thinking, is that he went to Ring of Honor first and then moved over there. And I guess it was basically the same time, though. Yeah, so that I guess that timeline matches up, just because Joe got stuck going down to NXT and AJ Styles didn't. That kept them away from each other in the WWE. Samoa Joe being part of Raw kept them apart also for at least a year. So it was pretty easy to keep these two apart for, you know, a short time frame, I would say, in some respects. In other respects, hey, we'll see what they've learned in the meantime. I do feel like AJ Styles personally was reinvigorated after he left TNA. I did kind of feel like the end of his run there was not the best work of his career. But he's
when they basically had him playing Sting, you know, with the Aces and, oh God, Aces and Eights, and
yeah.
Let's not.
I'm just gonna leave that alone, and just say that AJ Styles improved after he left there. and for the better. So it'll be interesting. They maybe are not as close to or are getting out of their athletic primes, but I do think that they can still put on a more than quality match with the two of them. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it quite a bit.
Yeah, I am too. Absolutely.
And to talk about, well, we were talking about the repeat matches on the Raw side. Though it is not a repeat from Extreme Rules. Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. And I forget who tweeted that out earlier today. I will admit, I forgot a couple of, well, not a couple of Brock versus Roman Reigns matches. I 100% forgot about the one with Dean Ambrose in a three-way match. The other one, I think the four-way, and I'm trying to think of who else was in that four-way, because I believe it was
Braun and Joe.
Oh,
that was my match of the year last year. So no, I definitely won't forget that one. That was one of the best. That was arguably the best four-way of all time. But if we're just sticking to the one-on-one meetings between the two, it's not really that much. I mean, even if you count the two multiple person deals, it's still only 5 times in 3.5 years. It's not that much, but I mean, the match at WrestleMania was really just not anticipated at all. It didn't hold a candle to their match in San Francisco in 2015 at 31. And then you had the Greatest Royal Rumble match, which wasn't Cage match at Greatest Royal Rumble, which wasn't much of anything.
Right.
It was just a going through the paces, almost a glorified house show match. Yeah, and they've just dragged this out and dragged this out and dragged this out. And it's just, I hope they just do it. Just do it.
by do it, I would assume that you mean Roman Reigns finally pinning Brock Lesnar.
Yes, let's just, we gotta stop this. Stop. I have to just do it.
Yeah.
What they want to do. The crowd will react however they want. It won't be pretty.
No.
It's time to just do it. And do not have Roman Reigns get cashed in immediately afterward. Don't do that. Oh my God, do not do that. Let him run with it then. If that's what you want so badly, let him beat Brock and run with it for a little while.
Well, yeah, and I mean, everyone kind of mentions that. If Reigns had won and Seth Rollins hadn't honestly created, like, the greatest cash-in of all time, you know, you probably don't have some of the resentment that Roman Reigns gets.
Yeah, you know what?
I would think some of it would still be there, no matter what.
That was the right decision at the right time. What wasn't the right decision at the right time was them seemingly finally getting somewhere with Roman Reigns after that night he Superman punched Vince McMahon and beat Sheamus, and then he lost it to Triple H in the Royal Rumble match itself.
Oh,
that might have been where things hit some degree of irreparable
harm. Yeah.
And
I can see that.
But, I mean, but, and now we're here. It's, you know, we're years later. Brock's on his way out. Once again, we've dragged this thing out. They just should have lost.
Yeah, I mean,
all we want about how it should have been. It should be Braun, and yes, it should be Braun. But Roman Reigns should have turned heel a long time ago. Hell, maybe if he turned heel two or three years ago, he'd be ready to be the top babyface today.
He probably would be. But they can never comprehend that until it happens, which happens to them all the time.
Right, yeah. But no, I mean, let's just get like a Band-Aid, 5-minute match, all action, you know, the Lesnar-Goldberg, you know, Lesnar-Goldberg, what's the word I'm looking for?
Slugfest?
Yeah, no, the Lesnar-Goldberg template from WrestleMania last year.
No.
Just all big moves, 5 minutes, just get it over with. that's the only way to do this. Well, we'll be coming at the end of a very long show. They may not go into the ring until about close to, you know, 4 hours into the damn show. 5 hours to count the pre-show. You know, it just can't be pretty. I mean, WWE pay-per-views have not been ending well. Essentially, well, exception of Braun winning the Money in the Bank. You know, that was the right call after a long time.
Yeah.
But lately, it has not been to your advantage. Since WrestleMania, and since everything went to, you know, 4 hours, essentially.
Oh, right.
It has not been to anyone's advantage to be in that main roster.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting, too. Oh crap! I thought about a Jeremy idea that was connected in here. Oh, because it had something to do with Braun Strowman, and I am kind of fumbling for what it was. Oh man, complete brain cramp. So anyway, yeah, I guess I wouldn't mind if Braun made it a 3-way match or something weird like that. But him, that's what it was. Jeremy mentioned that, although I do like the stipulation of Kevin Owens can win the Money in the Bank briefcase in their match, Braun Strowman should still crush him because he just knows he can't maim Kevin Owens now, but he should still be able to physically dominate him, so... I don't know why that's that big of a deal, but Jeremy mentioned Kevin Owens just always being there when Braun tried to cash in. And I know that they've run some similar angles to that in the past, but I do think that that would be a good way for Kevin Owens to get back at Braun Strowman. And they certainly didn't hint at it. Who knows if the end of this match will be the end of their feud. Because Kevin Owens still could interfere in the cash-in somewhere down the line.
I mean, and yes, there is a chance they could go with Kevin Owens. We could win the briefcase. But my whole thing is, they've got to let Roman reign. Yes, Roman Reigns reign, yes. they got to let him just hold the title. You know, if they're going to force it.
Oh,
more stupidity.
Yeah.
No more Roman Reigns being a 5-6 time champion with a grand total of, you know, what, 4 or 5 months, a 5 time champion with a grand total of 5 months of, whatever it is that I'm going to do, what, like 150 days as champion total.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those things too where, as much as you could hate on John Cena, you could always fall back to the, no, seriously, they have him go over in every big match. And they've had Roman Reigns go over in every big match except for the ones that have counted.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, even when they, the one time they let him have it for 2 months, he beat AJ Styles twice, then he lost to Seth Rollins, who immediately lost to Dean Ambrose. And you know what? Reigns actually hasn't been champion, either Universal or WWE champion, since June of 2016.
Yeah, that is not completely surprising to me.
But of course, people will always say that he's being shoved down their throats, and maybe that will never go away But until it causes a large downturn in business and ratings, just ignore the whining of the man babies in the audience and just go with the guy.
Yeah, because the whining man babies in the audience, if they need to, and they really, and I think Shahid and I touched on this last week, if they really want to get back at the WWE, don't go to their events. Don't give them money.
Yeah, right.
It is that simple.
I mean, I have seen it with my own eyes. Women love Roman Reigns.
Oh.
I have been in the room with many people who really never watched wrestling before, because they just happened to be over at the party house when we were watching wrestling, and they were immediately drawn to him and started watching.
Yeah, and I don't know how many times on our show in years past were like, because I think it was, oh yeah, it was definitely the WrestleMania in Dallas, where we came downstairs for breakfast at whatever chain hotel we were staying at, and there was a whole family, like five of them, I think, decked out in Roman Reigns gear.
Yeah, and that's five tickets. Five people buying merchandise.
Yep. Once
again, you know what? Maybe the plan is... I saw something. Maybe the plan is... Let's kick the man babies out, and let's get a lot of families in here.
Hey, if... yeah, if they're going to sell more stuff because of that, God bless. Because again, Reigns kind of, he needs that type of, you know, he needs that win. He needs that, like you said, reign. Honestly, like, I guess I hadn't realized how little he had had the title belt as far as his lengths of championship reigns. And not that he needs to go to the Brock Lesnar, you know, CM Punk land of number of days held. But he does need to hold on to it until, you know, at least the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. He needs a good long reign. I mean, once again, the only thing is with that is that if you do have Braun with the briefcase, why is he waiting?
Oh,
that's not really Braun Strowman's style, which, once again, that might... maybe you make the switch to Kevin Owens, because at least then Kevin Owens would be more meticulous about it and more devious about it. I mean, they still... they're not even going to explain... I doubt they'll even explain why... I mean, the logical thing to say would be that until after the match at SummerSlam with Kevin Owens, there is a freeze on Money in the Bank and Braun Strowman cashing in Money in the Bank. But they probably won't say that. So it won't make any sense why he doesn't attack Brock Lesnar as soon as he walks in the building on Monday. Maybe they'll surprise me and try to make sense out of it, but I doubt they will.
Yeah, I mean, they have certainly portrayed Braun Strowman as someone who can't be controlled and just wants competition from the jump, so it does make zero sense if he doesn't try to go after Lesnar the moment he's around. But they, hopefully, like you said, hopefully they have something in store for us. But I'm not exactly hopeful on that point either. Anything else to cover in the world of the WWE before we mosey on along here?
No, I think we've sufficiently handled all WWE related business that came up this week that is of importance to our wonderful listeners.
Okie dokie. Well, my brother-in-law had recently been up in Michigan for a vet conference, and I have slowly been drinking the beverages that he gave me from your fine state there. Dark Horse Brewing, Double Crooked Tree, India Pale Ale.
I've had Dark Horse Brewing, but I think I've had their porter and or their stout. I don't think I've done any. I have not had the pale ale there. How's that drink?
Well, it is a imperial IPA for sure, because it is 12% alcohol, and it goes down quite smooth. It does have that funk hop that comes with any imperial, well, I shouldn't say any imperial IPA, but with a vast majority of them, where you really gotta like the bitterness and the pininess, to me, of the hops that they use. And I do. I'm not always the biggest fan, but it is not too overwhelming. There's a sweetness to it because there is that much alcohol and that much malt in there. So yeah, it's a good one. I can't remember if I've actually tried this before or not, but I always appreciate my brother-in-law has good taste in beer, so I will never argue if he brings me a few from his travels. And with that, I'm at Frango11, that's at Chris Calamita, the brand at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
Later.